Thank you, Pamela. Those are great comments. I'm going to start with the first one about putting our Armenian case in a broader history of empathy and dignity. I think what's striking to me is that usually, because of what I describe in the paper as the historiography of the Armenian genocide or the Armenian question, is always tied to a nationalist kind of discourse, which is strongly about rights and justice and connecting these things to the, I wouldn't say the specifics of the Armenian case, but emphasizing the importance or maybe accentuating the importance of the fate of the Armenian in the post-genocide context, which to me doesn't quite speak to the ambivalence of Armenian suffering the way it has been portrayed in scholarship, and not specifically the nationalist scholarship. So my concern is obviously to connect that historiography to something like the historiography of humanitarianism, for example. But as I said in my paper, I don't claim that there's something unique about the Armenian case. What I found certainly to be striking is the frequency and the, you know, the how much it creeps up into the discussions and the debates, both within international law scholarship and within either diplomatic history or, you know, discussions within the League itself about the Armenian case. So I do think that the specific direction that I took about empathy and suffering and sort of recent kind of resurgence of interest in this kind of work, and, you know, Samuel Moyne, since we're talking about him, has said those two things have to be kept separate, but there is an interest in looking at the genealogies of humanitarianism. My interest is really to look at how these connections are being made or not made in the first place. So it's very important, and I'm glad you draw that to my attention. I constantly have in mind. What I would say, though, is that the specific thing I'm struggling with and that I'm perhaps not doing a good job until now to actually push is this idea of empathy governance, which is just another way of saying humanitarianism is a form of governing people that you are, you know, purporting to be saving in the first place. And I certainly haven't felt comfortable tying that to a genealogy of immigrants. So a recent work by Eric Weitz actually makes this claim that it is part of the genealogy of human rights, because at the same time that you have the protective principle of ensuring protection for minorities and refugees and so on, you are also displacing and deporting them. And that was then the dark side of human rights. I'm not sure I'm convinced of the necessity to talk about a genealogy of human rights in this case, even though the history is a messy one, as Weitz would say. I'm not convinced that there's any added value or purchase on that claim about tying this to genealogy of human rights, as opposed to looking at it from the perspective of conceptions and ambiguities about human suffering and how that becomes part also of a nation-building project. So that's part of the question. That's something that goes along with the question about the continuities and shifts for empathy governance. Over time, is there a point that is reached where there's a connection made with human rights history or not, or that point will never come? As far as the literature on Balkanism and Todorova, I actually reference work by Joe Laycock, who is a historian in Manchester, I believe, who actually looks at Todorova's work and says that the Armenian case is similar in terms of the ambiguity, but she doesn't make the claim about Armenianization or specific Armenianism or Caucasianism, as Keith would say. I borrowed from her work because I find the claim about the ambiguity of the Armenian case to be interesting between East and West. But I tie that to a broader history of humanitarianism, which I think, to the extent that you don't necessarily go to the point of saying, here we are and here's the bridge to human rights history, then there's something specifically interesting about a contextual situational analysis of that history of humanitarianism, which still needs to be done. Thank you.
Yeah, I also want to thank you for really good comments, and thank you for encouraging my critique of Mazar. As goes for secularism, that's, as I said, that's really an immense field, and I'm still reading up my Al-Assad, but that will show surely be an important part of my of the analytical framework in my dissertation. But I have two more years to conclude that. But I think it's interesting to note that freedom of religion for someone like Maritain or for Malik was really against secularism in a way. Whereas if you consider the rhetoric of the, say, the European Court of Human Rights, then religious liberty and secularism go hand in hand. So I think that that's an extremely interesting move that occurs during the 20th century, which I'm destined to look into further. So that's it. Thanks.